You are listening to The Bad Duo Back in Style on Punk News Podcast episode 410.
If you wanna know the real deal about the two, let us tell you we're double trouble girls and we're doing it just for you. Now people clap your hands, clap, just clap your hands. Come on, while you're rocking to the beat of the two, and we got the master plan. So clap your hands, young ladies,
y'all rat tag,
and fly guys if you wanna get down with us.
Get up on the floor,
get up and everybody just show your stuff. Now if you
don't know
the real deal about the two. Trouble girl, and we're doing it just for you. So,
oh crap, there we go. That's right, this is features editor John Gentile, and I'm also here with managing editor or Adam. How do you refer to yourself these days? Managing editor, guy around town in trench coat.
I made them take managing editor off my name because it implied that I'm responsible. So, it's I think contributing editor right now, which is very vague.
It is. Did you like how I popped the champagne at the beginning of this episode, Adam White?
That or you fell down? I couldn't tell.
I actually opened some Redding Draft root beer. It's tasty.
I am drinking a... What is it here? It is a Fitzpatrick Family Vineyards 2017 Pinot Blanc.
Fancy. Adam White drinking a little bit of white wine on the Punk News Podcast. Anyways, listen, let's get down to it. All the podcasts these days are an hour and 40 minutes long when the podcast used to be like 55 minutes. But the people aren't complaining about that, Adam, so I guess we'll just keep being windbags. I mean, for me,
people have not proven to me that they have a better use for their time.
Well, we're very compelling people, Adam White. You can always reach that pod. Oh, actually, well, first, Adam White, you went to see Devo, but not Devo. Talk about your Devo adventure.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk about my Devo adventure. So I've been trying to parse in my head how this experience that I'm about to describe is any different from when, you know, your dad goes to see, like, the Led Zeppelin tribute act.
Well, my dad wouldn't go see Led Zeppelin tribute act.
But those seem to be fairly popular around here, and I think it's like a baby boomer thing. There's like classic albums live series. Like people go out and they're like they'll see like a bunch of musicians that, you know, are generally like a bunch of like long hair, you know, dudes that hang around in a Guitar Center kind of thing.
Past guys. Their prime a little bit past their prime.
Yeah, but they're actually pretty good, and like they've really excruciatingly learned how to play like, I don't know, whatever, Zeppelin 2 or something, right? And they play the whole thing like it's like identical to the studio record and all that, and in these big amphitheaters, and people pay like $5 to go see them and sit in the lawn. And I've never done any of that, so I don't want to criticize it or anything. They're never things that I'm interested in, so I never attend. So I'm not sure how what I'm about to describe is really any tactically different than that, but I don't know, it feels different. Maybe because I know people that are involved in this. So the one thing that I've learned, John, over the years is that all the bands that I'm into in the modern day are really fucking into Devo.
I was actually going to talk about it because you love that band Boogie Boys, and you also love another Uncontrollable Urge or something. Don't you love another band named after?
Yeah, well, I mean, those are the obvious ones, right? Where the actual name of the band is taken from a Devo song. But not even that. Just like the kind of punk that I'm into is always just about like, you know, they're weird. They're full of like strangeness and herky jerky rhythms, and just, you know, overall just like a sense of like kind of krautrock inspired play and all this.
You say Devo is krautrock inspired?
There's krautrock weirdness that works into Devo's universe, right? But just like, so like and you know, I'm looking at like even bands that aren't like a band like, say, like the Spits, right?
Ah,
like you know, total Devo.
Devotees,
just in the weirdness, right?
Yeah.
But so anyway, so there's a lot of to a lot of the bands that I'm listening to these days, it really feels that like Devo is like the Clash to the bands that I was listening to in the 90s. Where like every band I was listening to in the 90s that I was really in love with was super inspired by the Clash. And these days, it's like all the bands that I'm really in love with are super inspired by Devo. Or at least that's how it feels. So anyways, to like really like put a put a fine point on that. So this year, this month, actually, Devo's first LP, you know, Are We Not Men, Are We Devo, right? So I said that wrong, didn't I?
Quick, yeah, are we not men? Answer, we are Devo.
Yeah. So that record was released 40 years ago. It was released on August 28th, 1978. So a bunch of guys that I happen to know a lot of these guys that are in a bunch of bands that have, you know, various Devo influences decided, you know, Devo's not going to come play that album front to back, you know, in the local bar. So we'll do it. And they have spent, well, the evidence tells me, an ungodly amount of time putting this together. And so they created this band, and the band is called Are We Not Devo? We Are Not. And it's six guys that are in this band. On vocals, you have a guy named Andrew Payne. Andrew Payne was the singer of a Toronto kind of synth punk band that was called Century Palm. And he was also a frontman of a Ottawa-based band years ago called like Zebra Sures or something like that. And he does like weird electronic stuff now as Vanity Face. So it's Andrew on vocals. And then everyone else in this band are from various like Toronto area kind of like punk and indie rock bands and things like that. So you have one of the guitarists from Century Palm, one of the guitarists from a band called First Bass. You have the bassist from First Bass. And on drums, and this is really my connection in here. So one of my favorite bands these days is Tough Age. So the drummer of Tough Age, who also played in Century Palm, you know, currently drums for Simply Saucer, who we've talked about on the show here, has another band that he plays in that's really cool called Rotten Column. His name is Jesse. So Jesse was drumming for this band too, and he was really my connection in here because he was kind of keeping me up to date on what was going on. So they put together this Devo band, and they learn, you know, Q, Are We Not Men, A, We Are Devo, front to back. Like note for note, exactly. They go and they made themselves every amount of costuming that they could to be Devo. And they are going to go play, like, they were supposed to be like one show in Toronto. It's actually happening tonight when we're recording this. But they went and they, since they had, I guess, gone through all this effort, put together, I think, two or three shows in the province. There's one in Ottawa coming up, the one in Toronto's tonight, and the one that was last night was in Hamilton. And the Hamilton one was not very well promoted. I think it was a little bit of the rehearsal performance for them. You know, it didn't have a Facebook event page or anything like that, which, you know, if it doesn't have a Facebook event page, John, it doesn't exist.
It don't exist.
Right? So I drove out there, went to the bar. It was, you know, there was maybe, I was up near the front, so it's hard for me to tell, but maybe at the max, like 30, 40 people in this bar to watch this thing. But it was incredible. They all come out. They're in, you know, the full yellow, like, hazmat suits. They have, like, the big, big square, blocky Devo sunglasses on. And they're on stage. They're standing as still as statues. They salute. They start playing. They're going into the first song on that record. And, you know, they're just, they had it down. Like, they're playing, well, Uncontrollable Urge, the song, and they're jerking around like robots and everything as they're playing it, and they just played the whole record front to back through, and it was so good. It was good enough that, and I have two indications of this. The one is that after their first song, some guy that was at the bar just emphatically screams, like, as if he was crying tears of joy. He's just like it's perfect, it's fucking perfect. Right? And then there was a couple guys that were there that were wearing the flower pots, the energy domes, whatever they call them, that had clearly like shown up to the show with that in tow, like they owned one from their own personal proclivities. And they're like, this is my one chance to go out to a bar in Hamilton and wear my Devo energy dome. And they were there, and their biggest smiles on these guys' faces, and they were just losing their minds about this. But they went and they played, I want to say they played up through Giacomo, and then then the yellow hazmat suits, the jumpsuits or whatever, came off, and they were all wearing like a different Devo costuming under that. Mm. Yeah, they kept playing. You know, this one was like all like short black shorts and like a short black shirt with Devo written on it. And then they played a little bit more of the record, but then when they got to Shrivel Up, Andrew kind of jumps down to the ground and hides his head and comes back on, and he's wearing the fucking like Boogie Boy mask, and you know, sang Shrivel Up completely in like that you know, disturbing childlike Boogie Boy voice. You know, at a certain point they all donned they all donned their own flower pots and everything like that. Like, there was costuming and everything that was worked into it, and like, I had the best time. It was an amazing show because they were so good, and that's a fucking awesome record anyways. So, you know, just it all just worked out well. But that's what I've been thinking about today, and I'm like, oh my god, like, am I really old now? Like, is this what happens when, you know, my dad or my mom will go to see, like, you know, the local theater will have the Eagles tribute band, and they'll tell me about it the next day and be really excited about it, and they're like, oh, the guitar player was so good, and I'm like, Dad, there's nothing that I want to hear about less than a fucking Eagles tribute band. That sounds like, I mean, I'm glad you had fun, but this is not a topic of conversation that I can engage in at all. It does not seem interesting to me. But here I am, and I'm like, I saw a Devo tribute band, basically, but they were so good, John. So,
Adam, I want to say we're still cool and hip and not getting old, but as you know, we won't name
your old record. I think we are old now.
We won't name the band, but we are working on Band Week for the fall. And a lot of the younger writers don't give a crap about this band. And to me, like how do you not love this band, or at least like are not a fan? They just don't. It's just like before their time. You know what I mean? They just don't, Adam. They don't. How do you not love this band?
I'm increasingly unsure of what. Oh my god, I'm gonna make a Blink 182 reference. I'm unsure of what age I am, John, because the things that I get really excited about are something like, you know, oh, there's a Devo tribute. But then the bands that are supposed to be big right now, you know, whenever we do talk about them, we completely dismiss them or don't talk about them at all. Which, by the way, Twitter has shown me today that we should probably just not talk about them at all.
Yeah, let's talk about that in for a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do want to say, though,
the bands that I am interested in are all these, like, super tiny, weird little bands that no one gives a shit about, you know, except for other weirdos. Anyways, so I'm unsure. I'm unsure of what age I'm supposed to be.
One thing is, as you get older, even though we're older, it's not that we're old. It's that a lot of things people are like, oh, this is so great. It's like, I've seen this before, and I've seen it done way better. You know what I mean? But to them, it's like, new, you know. Hell, I'll throw shade. This band Turnstile, people are freaking out over Turnstile. I don't hate Turnstile. I think they're fine. But it's like, this is just kind of like generic post-hardcore 90s rock, like Biohazard or something. Like, why are you people freaking out over this? This is like, if this was like 1995... this band would be like dropped from a major label after their first record, you know? Why? Like, no one can explain. Like, it's the same way with a lot of the Beardo bands and the Crybaby bands. I say to people, what's so amazing about this record? Why does this record move you? And no one can explain it to me. So I do question if it's all hype or mostly hype, you know?
I just feel like I'm on a different track, because it's not like I'm not consuming new music. Like, in fact, like given my newsletter and everything, I'm probably listening to more new stuff in the past 2 years than I have, you know, since I was a teenager, or maybe ever. So it's by no means am I like not engaging in new music. It's just the stuff that I'm choosing to engage in, nobody in the, at least within like the punk news, like the greater punk news universe, seems to give too much of a shit about.
Yeah, honestly, so, Adam, all the new stuff we like, everyone else hates.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that makes us. Like, it doesn't make us old, because if we were old, we could just like sit around here and just talk about Devo and not want to talk about other stuff. It's a very confusing time. I'm not sure.
One of our regular Twitter, one of our regular listeners, I think is a guy named Bobby who writes in a lot. He said, I think we were dissing Blink 182 or one of those.
Or things. Alkaline Trio.
Trio. And he's like, if you're going to diss Alkaline Trio, why are you even talking about them? You should just talk about things that you like. And from ASAN perspective, I agree with Bobby in that, like, if I was listening to a podcast and they were dissing, I don't know, if they were dissing
Amoebics.
Well, that's an old band, but that would annoy. Oh. Actually, you're right. Okay, it's good. Like I'm like, man, these guys suck. These guys don't know what they're talking about. But on the other hand, if I was listening to a podcast and they were dissing Black Flag's What the Album, I would be like, well, that's not a great album. That is a bad album by a great band, you know. So that wouldn't annoy me. The point being is, should we not talk about stuff we don't like? I feel that kind of is almost as like, if you just talk about everything that you like, then it's like one of those stupid YouTube videos where everything's like, gee, wow, I'm so excited for the next Marvel movie. Wow, I can't believe it. Black Panther's in this one. Wow, Cyclops is going to do the tango in this one. Wow. You know, like, if it's all positivity, it's almost as meaningless as if it's all hate. I certainly don't want to be a hate podcast, but
I think it's got to be informed hate, right? There's no way, like, we put a lot of stuff into the show because we sort of feel obliged. And actually, one of the little the things that happens pre-show is we look at the list of stories that we're going to talk about, and we'll throw out, like, you know, do we want to skip this one? Is there anything we really want to say? And most, like, 9 times out of 10, that'll weed out the thing that we're going to talk about. But then, you know, something like that Alkaline Trio one that comes out, and I don't know, maybe it's usually me that's advocating this, where I'll go and I'll say, like, wow, like, a lot of people really like that band. Like, it probably bears mentioning. Like, if we don't mention it, it's like we're standing outside, but we're not mentioning that it happens to be raining, right? Like, we don't like the rain, but we're not going to mention it because.
Yeah. Right?
But the answer is probably, you know, going back to what I was saying earlier, where there is so much music that we're listening to that people don't seem to talk about, we probably just shouldn't talk about those things.
Because
it's not like we're saying, to take your Black Flag example, it's not like we're saying, like, oh man, when, you know, the new Alkaline Trio stuff is really, really pales in comparison to God Damn It and blah, 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 blah. Because, John, you and I didn't fucking listen to God Damn It, right? So,
like, I was in the damaged, Adam. You know what I'm saying? I was just in the damaged.
That band's classic era you and I have no interest in the first place, so we can't even, like, slag on the new stuff with an informed critical opinion based on their old stuff. It's just like there was no chance we were ever going to talk about Alkaline Trio and be anything more than disinterested in it, so yeah, we should probably just avoid
it. But the other thing is, then do we just live in our own little world and not talk about stuff that most people talk about? You know,
yes.
What I mean?
Yes, I say we do. Mm. Well, this should have been part of the survey, but yeah.
Should we just live in our own little world?
Well, I mean, there is, this is an internet problem, but there is an abundance of stuff that's out there. Tons of music from all sorts of places. And we could run punk news and talk about, and I'm not advocating this for punknews.org proper, I'm just talking about the podcast, but just for the sake of argument, we could run punk news and only talk about, you know, Texan punk bands that no one has heard about. And we would probably have the same volume of stories that we do right now.
That's true.
Like there's enough music that is within the loose confines of the genre that comes out of anywhere. And it's just that we happen to talk about certain things where there's precedence. You know, we've talked about those bands before. People have written reviews about those bands. Those bands are getting PR from, you know, PR people that are tuned into what punk news is doing. Like, there's a whole historic reason why certain bands get talked about and certain don't. But, you know, if we're talking about something that is as micro an organism as the podcast, you know, the world will keep turning if we don't talk about Alkaline Trio.
Well, speaking of the world turning, let's reach into the mailbag because we get mail from across the world. This is from, let's see here. This is from Robert. Never mind.
Yeah, fuck you, Robert.
All right, this is from Jason. Jason's written in a bunch of times before, and Jason simply says, Mike Ness is the living legend. So let's talk about Mike Ness, Adam, and then we'll play a song or something like that. Jason B. frequently writes in and says Mike Ness is the living legend, and it's in response to a story. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. But last month, Mike Ness was at a Social Distortion show. He was playing on the stage. They were doing a song. Near the end of the show, Mike Ness goes on an anti-Trump rant. While he's on the anti-Trump rant, a guy who had paid to get into the show, it was in Sacramento, Ace of Spades. I've seen the Melvins there. A guy called Tim Hildebrand, who was 30, gave Mike Ness the middle finger during the entire speech and then yelled out, "I paid for your music, not your politics," which it makes one question. Do you know what punk rock is, Tim? Anyways, he's giving Mike Ness the finger for two songs. Then, just near the encore, Mike Ness allegedly jumps into the audience and starts punching Hildebrand in the head. Security guards drag Hildebrand through the melee and basically to the back of the thing, and it was the end of the concert. The Sacramento Police Department are investigating the incident, but no charges have been filed yet. If you watch the video, it's pretty clear that Hildebrand is actually like yelling at Mike Ness and flicking him off during the songs, and it's pretty clear, in my opinion, that Ness climbs. It was a little awkward in that, like, the stories make it seem like he jumped off the stage and was wailing on the guy, but he, like, climbed off the stage, then walked up to him, and then punched him in the head. And this had very mixed reactions. It seemed that most of the punk news readers said, good on Mike Ness. Mike Ness is the living legend for punching alt-right guys. I've got an opinion, but Adam, I'm interested in hearing your opinion first, unless you want me to take the first dive, and you can bounce off that.
No, I'll stick my neck out here.
Well, actually, Adam, we should ask the listeners, are they paying for our politics, or are they paying for the music, our listeners?
Paying for our politics?
Yes.
Well, they ain't paying us shit, so they're going to listen to what we give them. My very Canadian answer to this is that there's a lot of gray area here. And I can both praise and criticize Ness for what's going on here. So on the one hand, you don't, if you pay to go to a show, if you go pay to see a performance, and a punk rock performance in particular, and a punk rock performance from a band and individual that is known to be outspoken in particular.
Is he known for being outspoken?
He's known for being, he's not known for being a wallflower, I guess is yeah, what yeah, I'm yeah. saying. You know, he's not Tom Morello or anything like that, but Mike Ness is a big, larger than life punk guy who of course has opinions on things, I guess is what I'm getting at. Like, you're paying to be there for the performance, and you have to some degree give yourself up to what the performance is doing. So if, you know, if they're going to get on stage and rant about politics, I don't know if the most fruitful way to you express your displeasure about that is to make a public stink about it or anything. You know, like go home and write about it on your live journal blog or something. Like I you know, giving him the finger or yelling at him from the crowd seems like not a great way to do that. And it strikes me that this individual is potentially not.
Is it dickbag?
No, I was going to say dick, but I was going to say maybe not from the scene. I mean, like, and not political, not because of his politics, but I mean maybe not because he didn't perceive that as – he didn't perceive that action as being maybe an inappropriate response when standing there in a crowd full of punk rockers and in front of Social Distortion. You know, there's a lot of people that are into Social D as a result of – those few radio hits that they had, and you know, may see this as a hard rock show as opposed to something with a long punk lineage. Like they, you know, they're not there because, you know, of the long history of Social Distortion and their place in the Californian punk scene or whatever, right? Like they're there because they heard, you know, Hard Feelings, or what was their radio hits? Was Hard Feelings one?
Oh, that was a good one. Yeah, that was.
But yeah,
that was a great one. I love that tune.
Jesus Christ. Okay. songs off of like White Light, White Heat, White Trash, and the record before that that actually did get radio play, right? So there's definitely people that are going to come out to a Social D song that are going to be more from the just kind of radio rock crowd, and I would maybe suspect that this guy is more from that realm, because if you were coming at this from being someone that was in the punk scene, you know, I paid for your music, not your politics, is not the kind of sentiment that you would take. Like, that's not the position that you would take. But all that said, I'm all for Mike, you know, returning the favor and heckling this guy for, you know, making a spectacle out of him since he's, you know, clearly trying to get the attention. I'm all for him jumping into the crowd and giving him shit. I don't quite know if punching a guy in the head is the right solution here, and I would venture it's probably not. And I mean, you called the guy alt-right a second ago when you were talking, and like, I don't even necessarily know if that's true.
I didn't call him alt-right, did I?
Yeah, you said alt-right, but
I said, you know, I don't think I called him alt-right.
Not Ness.
The other guy.
Oh, I thought you did. In any case, you know, you could be a big angry right-wing Trump supporter, and that doesn't necessarily make you Richard Spencer, right? And while I could totally see, you know, the scenario where, you know, a Nazi rally leader like Spencer is, you know, speaking in the public square, and you're out there protesting, and you decide that the way that you're going to express your protesting is to run up and sock him. You know, that's a problematic thing to do, but I get it. In this case, you know, this guy in the crowd is an asshole, and he politically disagrees with you. Punching him in the head might not be the right way to go about that. Specifically because, you know, we've given a lot of individuals some shit on this show about, you know, taking a swing at one of their audience members. So we kind of have to apply that to everyone, I think. You probably shouldn't punch people at your show in any scenario.
I disagree with that statement. If you recall, during the whole Fat Mike incident, where the guy jumped up on his back and Mike, I think, hit him with the car and the guitar, then kicked him, I say Fat Mike was entirely in the right in that scenario.
No, I would, yeah, and I actually agree in that, but this guy ran up on stage and jumped on him. I was thinking more of the Ben Weasel scenarios.
Ah, well, the Ben Weasel scenario is a very tricky thing, because it's an important part is that it's a female that spit on him instead of a male, you know. I think with the Ben Weasel thing, if it was a man that spit on Ben Weasel and Ben Weasel punched the guy, I don't think anybody would care. You know what I mean? The fact that it was a female, I think, makes it lame. But that's hindsight, you know, that's hindsight. But Ben Weasel should not have hit a woman, no question. And he certainly shouldn't have hit the second woman that was trying to defend the other woman. That's kind of a different topic. Here, we don't have the threat of physical violence. We only have speech. And I want to side with Mike Ness and say it's awesome that he's punching. I mean, this guy's clearly being a douchebag. The guy knows he's being a douchebag. And I highly resent and am even offended by the concept that an artist is your lapdog there to perform just for you in the manner that you want them to perform. That is not what an artist is, and anyone that sees an artist as that way doesn't understand art, and honestly, I think is, to a degree, is kind of a selfish person, if you will, and a person that maybe feels as though there's a certain power dynamic in them buying a ticket to a show. So I want to side with Mike Ness. With the fact Mike was totally good to punch that guy, because that guy jumped up on him. And I usually do approve of bands on stage punching people in the audience when those people are being dicks. And I generally approve of dicks getting punched by people in both scenarios. However, I want to side with Mike Ness on this one, but Adam, you know how important freedom of speech is to me. The guy was being a dick, and he was flicking off Mike Ness, but it was just speech. He wasn't physically threatening anyone. So I do feel as though Mike Ness was wrong to punch him. And especially since Mike Ness had the power. I mean, Mike Ness had the mic. Mike Ness could have just like ran on this guy and got the people to boo him and make fun of him and all this. And of course, hindsight is 20/20. He lost his cool and he flipped out. You know, when you're in the heat of the moment, it's not the same as two guys sitting behind their computers drinking Redding Draft root beer and saying, well, this is what I would have done. But what I will say is Mike Ness shouldn't have hit the guy, although his crime, if you will, is not that big of a deal. I mean, it was lame of him to do it, but he's not a terrible person for doing it. I think the worst reprimand he should get is, Mike Ness, don't you do that again, you bad little boy. And I think that's about the amount of sanctions he should get. One thing, Adam, and then I'll let you reply, is with these scenarios, though, it's always like an asshole that reaps the benefit of the victory, if you will. It's like, this guy knows he's being an asshole. He knows he's skirting the line. He knows he's pushing the issue. And it always seems like it's always assholes that kind of reap the benefit of someone flipping out and losing their cool. It's never a nice person that, like, that reaps the benefit of someone flipping out and losing their cool. It's always the prick trying to prod the person to get the other person to step over that line, whereas the aggressor, if you ask me, is, you know, hangs right on the line and just agitates. And so he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, the part about this that's illustrative to me is that it says in our article that, like, after the incident, the individual, the heckler who was punched, he was interviewed by the local news, and during that interview, he referred to Ness's speech as, quote, un-American, quote, end quote, anti-Trump. So that speaks to there being some disconnect, again, in the expectations of what can happen at, you know, at that kind of performance. Because to take issue with it being anti-American, but I mean, I'm not all soaked up in the middle of your rah-rah culture, so I don't know. But, like, I look at so what it was anti-American.
Well, not only that, is how is it anti-American when the president himself may have connections to one of our biggest opponents? You know, if anything, that's very pro-American in that we shouldn't have someone that's got the strings tied to Russia leading the country. You know what I mean?
But to go on the news and to be interviewed by, you know, so if you're being interviewed on the news, you have to be conscious of the, you know, the things that you are going to say are potentially going to be heard and seen by a lot of people. And if you're trying to make your case and make sure that you're the one that's coming out of this, dust up looking as the either as the victim or at least the one who is in the right, for you to make the case that, oh, well, you know, yeah, I was heckling him, but, you know, he was being anti-American. That, like, are you looking for sympathy from the viewer then? Like, the people at home are going to watch that anti-American? Well, he shouldn't have punched you then. Nobody should be anti-American. Like, just to have anti-American thrown around there as that's the trigger word by which we're supposed to go, oh, well, we're on your side, heckler guy, is, again, as a non-American, is weird to me.
Well, I do think being anti-American is poor form, Adam. I mean, I don't think someone should be punched for it, but I mean, I think all things considered, America is a pretty good country compared to a lot of other countries. So being anti-American, I think, would be short-sighted. That being said, the First Amendment guarantees to you the right to voice anti-American speech, certainly, you know. And I'm not even sure what Nice says was anti-American. On top of that, though, is him saying, you know, he's anti-Trump, anti-American. That's going to get his knucklehead friends and all those guys be like, yeah, he is anti-American. We hate him. So, you know, I think the viewership, Adam, is not the average Canadian, but rather the average person that may or may not think anti-Trump is the worst thing in the world.
Well, I mean, we're having a similar, a bit of a different flavored identity issue in this country right now, where, like, a lot of us that are on the that are on the left, let's say, in Canada right now, a lot of us treat Canada as sort of this, like, we feel ashamed to celebrate it in a way where we look and we go, okay, so here's the country that we live in, you know, a lot of stuff is pretty fucked up here that no one talks about. A lot of stuff is good compared to other countries, but, you know, it's still a place that, you know, we all exist in as colonizers, and, you know, based on the genocide of the indigenous.
I don't even know if I agree with that argument.
No, but that's I'm just saying that's a very in vogue opinion right now amongst, like, the Canadian left. Yeah. We're going and we're looking at it, and a big thing that's happened in the past few years up here is the idea that there's an official government like Truth and Reconciliation Commission, where the at least official government line, although they're not, Trudeau's not really doing a good job of it, is that we're supposed to be trying to like make things right. Like, you know, we realize that there's all these genocidal incidents and culturally genocidal, at least, if not say physically, that are in Canada's past that no one talked about for a long time. But now we're trying to talk about it as a means of us looking and saying that, like, you know, it's not all rosy up here, right? Like, it's all, you know, we can't ignore, you know, the people that we've put under our boots to kind of stand up and say that, like, hey, we're the greatest country in the world, right? So it's sort of in vogue right now up here in Canada to, you know, appreciate the place that we live, but at the same point, you don't wrap yourself too heavily in flag, because again, there's this whole colonial relationship we're trying to grapple with, right? And if you're on the left, that's the opinion that everyone is, or that's not the opinion, but that's the attitude a lot of people are approaching things with. If you say you were to go to, you know, a performance in Toronto right now, and it was, you know, it was anything, it was an art performance, it was a theater performance, it was a punk show, it was whatever, a lot of those are starting right now by someone coming out on stage and doing something which is called like a land acknowledgement, where we're saying that, like, you know what, we're performing tonight on the traditional lands of this or that nation, and, you know, or we acknowledge that we're on unceded territory of this nation at this point. And it's just like a little acknowledgement before the show that, you know, we recognize that, you know, everything's really good for us, but it's really good for us because, you know, we put someone down to get there. And that's really the Canadian left's opinion on it right now. So no one on, say, on the left up here is super pro-Canada from a patriotism standpoint. And we interact with things like, say, Canada Day, like our big national holiday, our version of the 4th of July. We interact with that awkwardly. See, because on the one hand, like, we do really like being up here, but on the other hand, it, like, again, it feels off to celebrate in that standpoint. And I'm not saying that the left up here is, and myself included, is doing like a great job of, you know, holding those two contradictory things in our hands, but like, that's what we're trying with. But at the same point, you go elsewhere in Canada and, you know, you get out of sort of the urban left and you get out more into the country and things like that, and people treat the flag and they treat Canada very much, I think, in the same way that, like, I would stereotype this, you know, rah, rah, rah Americanism, you know, people driving around in a pickup truck and they've got the Canadian flag in the back of their pickup truck. And they're the ones that are more likely going to take issue with, say, you know, an immigrant coming into the country and not, you know, immediately adhering to what they would consider, say, Canadian cultural values or anything like that. Whereas then on the left, we look at it and say, like, oh, well, you know, if they've got citizenship, then they're Canadian, like, fully. Like, they're not any more or less Canadian than you are. It doesn't matter how many generations they've been here, because that's not a real measure. So, like, if they're here and they got citizenship, like, they're Canadian, like, deal with it. And that's the kind of back and forth that's going on up here. So whenever we see things from the States and we see, you know, pro or anti-American in that stance, it's strange for us to grapple with, just because we have our own weird kind of identity crisis going on up here. So
just to speak nothing of the Native American or the immigrant issue, I think that they're in that argument. I think there's a leap being made that might not be the correct leap. Be a correct leap. That is to say, when some, I'll speak to the American side in that, when someone, well, there's two ways to view it, but to me, when I say America is great, you should be pro-American, I'm not saying that you should approve of what Donald Trump says. I'm not saying you should approve of, say, you know, the genocide of Native Americans. Being pro-American to me is saying the fundamental values upon which the country is founded and the people that live in America are important and good people. That is freedom of speech, freedom of religion, representation. Those fundamental values are what should be defended. So when I'm saying the pro-American, I'm saying the fundamental facet of the country and the way the country is formed is what is important and good and worth defending. That's being pro-American to me. However, what we see in America and other countries too is when people say, oh, I'm pro-American, it's saying, I think what the powers in charge are doing is good and right, and I think they are wrong, you see. I think it's almost, it might be entirely unique though to both United States and Canada. Because look at Mexico, Adam. You go to a soccer match in Mexico or wherever, they're waving Mexican flags all over. And they're saying, we love Mexico, Mexico is great. They're not saying they love the Mexican government. They're saying they love the Mexican people and the Mexican culture. You know, you go to Europe, they wave, you know, the UK flag wherever they go. The English flag, you know, or even the flag of the United Kingdoms. They're not just saying, we love, you know, the government. They're saying, we love the people and the fundamental beliefs that we have. And I think one of the disconnects, is you've seen the punk rock, is when you say, oh, that guy's pro-American. The punk rocker is saying that he's pro the government in charge, the government in charge, or pro the government's current policies. Where to me, being pro-American is being pro the fundamental values of the country. And I would argue right now, and actually I would certainly argue right now, that the powers that be are completely against the fundamental principles of our government, and therefore the powers that be are anti-American, and I'm pro-American. That's the argument I would make.
There's this weaponization of nationality that serves various interests, and it bums me out. I mean, it bums me out because there's a part of me that would want to, that very much wants to look at, say, America and say, like, America's amazing. Like, and I do believe this, like, America is an amazing place. Like, you guys have created amazing stuff. You have all this amazing cultural stuff that's there. You went to the moon, right? Like, there's
Space Force now too.
You got a fucking Space Force, right? But like, there's like, I want to look at that and I want to say, I want to live in this like pure naive world where I can say like, America's really fucking cool, man. Land of opportunity. Amazing. And at the same point, there's a part of me that wants to be, you know, very naive and say that like, Canada is great, man. Canada, like, a highest index on all the various, you know, living standards and happiness and everything. I mean, you know, we're not Finland. No one's Finland or Norway.
Like, or Netherlands. Netherlands.
Can't get those stats. But, you know, hey, we're doing pretty well. And if you're a Canadian, all you want to do is compare yourself to the Americans. So we'll look and go like, hey, man, look at it. We're doing so much better than them on all this shit. Healthcare, woo. Right? And you know, I want to do that. But the label, in the same way that like American gets all, you know, the quote unquote American gets all muddled between, you know, oh, you know, if you're not pro-American, you got to be pro-Trump to be pro-American, right? Like, in the same way that the word gets all munged between who's speaking it, I feel like Canada is sort of the same way right now, where, you know, there's, you know, a certain swath of, you know, anti-immigrant Canadian up here that is going to use Canadian as a code word for like white dude, right? So when they're saying like, oh, we respect Canadian values, what you mean is that you don't want brown people to move into your neighborhood and, you know, walk around with their scary turbans and headscarves and skin tones or whatever, and a lot of it means that, and it's just like, ah, it's just like, can we not make another word for these things so that some of us can use it to mean happy stuff and you can use it to be a racist and it's not the same word? But it's not. John, let's come back to this Mike Ness thing, because we're just talking about like why the world sucks right now.
I think we've solved all the world's problems, Adam, in a mere 50 minutes.
Should he have punched the guy?
Should he have punched the guy?
No. I'm not saying should he have reacted. I mean, like, let's say, as a given, Mike Ness was fully in his right to get angry, react, make a spectacle of this, get up in this dude's face. Hell, let's say he was fully justified in turning around and telling and saying, get this bum out of my show. I'm saying, was he right to rear back his fist and connect it with this dude's head?
No. The answer is no, because I believe in freedom of speech. And I believe in, if someone is not coming at someone else with violence, then violence is not the appropriate answer. And so, I mean, this is all in hindsight. So he should not have hit him. But the fact that he did hit him, like I said, not the worst crime in the world.
Oh, there's worse crimes, John. All right, let's move on here.
Well, speaking of here's a worse crime, and I don't even like Aerosmith. On Tuesday, Donald Trump. On Tuesday, Donald Trump had another rally, even though he's been president for a year and a half now. So I don't know why he's having rallies. It almost reminds me of a certain German guy who used to have rallies, even though he's already the leader. You know what I'm saying? I don't know, Adam. Anyways, the Germans, what have they ever done that's bad? So anyways, President Trump was having a rally on Tuesday, and during the rally, he came out to Aerosmith's "Living on the Edge" for some bizarre reason, both because that song is actually about being at the end of one's wits, and also because Aerosmith is a terrible band, and Aerosmith did not give him permission to do that. But not only that, is during his original campaign when he was trying to get elected president, he played "Dream On" before his speeches, and Steven Tyler, lead singer of Aerosmith, sent him 2 cease and desist for that. And Trump did it a third time, playing "Living on the Edge," and Steven Tyler sent him a cease and desist for that. Steven Tyler's attorney basically sent Trump a letter saying, listen, if you keep doing this, we're going to sue you not for copyright infringement, and there's a reason why he can't sue him for copyright infringement, Adam, but for trademark infringement. And it's not cool that you're playing Steven Tyler's tunes because we don't like you and we think that's wrong. I'm not an Aerosmith fan. I think they're cheesy. I'm not a Steven Tyler fan. I think he's corny and cheesy and not really that great. Though I do respect him for taking a stand where perhaps many other artists would not be taking a stand. And also, I can't believe Donald Trump broke the law, Adam. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, he broke the law. I can't believe it. After knowing he wasn't supposed to.
Can we talk about how... this isn't my joke. I'm stealing it from somewhere. But how Aerosmith looks like... there was something on Twitter where they were saying, like, if you look at Aerosmith these days, it looks like a convention of strip club owners.
That's pretty like, funny. That's pretty funny.
Those guys are looking – they're looking rough, but they're also looking, like, kind of rough and fancy at the same time. And strip club owner is the only thing you could put on there. I mean, all artists should – get up in a politician's face when the politician is using their song. It's a gift, really, to be able to turn around and to tell someone directly, you know, not only do we not like your politics, but like, you know, stop touching my things. That must feel kind of good. I have two questions for you as a legal scholar here.
Okay.
The second question will be to, you know, explain why it's trademark infringement. But the first question and is, if I was, say, running – this is a statement, not a question.
If you're running a strip club and
– that'll work. If I'm running a strip club, right, and I want to play Aerosmith songs at my strip club because all my strippers, they want to get down to Aerosmith, right? At least up here, I'm pretty sure that my way of going about that would be I would get a license from the performing arts organization. So like up here, it's SOCAN, but it's, you know, I don't know who does it in the States, BMI or ASCAP or something like that, right?
In the States, you get a public performance license from BMI or ASCAP, and then you can play whatever songs you want in a public place.
Right. So the optics of being able to tell a politician to go fuck themselves aside, are the use of songs as part of one of these public rallies not covered by that kind of agreement?
Good question, Adam. And the answer is maybe. The reason is the following. Is Trump at his rally, obviously it was probably at some kind of a stadium or that kind of thing. They obviously have public performance rights, broadcast rights for sound recordings. So if it was like, say it was like Blue Man Group and they came out to "Living on the Edge," no problem because they're paying the right to play that song in the venue, and Aerosmith is getting paid directly for those songs. However, Aerosmith is making the argument that by specifically coming out to that song and using that song as kind of a theme song, that there is confusion of ownership, source, or approval from the band directly. And so the question is, can a person playing a song be trademark infringement? because that is the audience assuming or believing, or is there a risk of them assuming that Aerosmith is approving of Trump because he's using their music? And the answer is, we don't know, because that's never actually been litigated yet. However, if that went to trial, I think actually the judge would probably rule on behalf of the band, because even though there is public performance rights, the fact that he's making a specific part of his performance and he's identifying with the lyrics or the sound or whatever, and he's coming out to that song perhaps on a repeated basis, then I think you do have a trademark infringement issue. But the real answer is no one knows, because it hasn't been litigated yet. Because when politicians get zapped by these things, which they it's at least one or two a year, they get scared and they stop doing it because they don't want to get sued by a band about how terrible they are.
John, if you were a band.
Yes.
If you were a band, like if you're not you were in a band, but you were a band, you were five people. Would you prefer that you just get left alone, or would you jump on the publicity hit of being able to tell Donald Trump to go fuck himself?
Well, how famous am I?
Alkaline Trio.
I would jump on it, especially because I'm a punk rocker, so I can get some bonus pops off of that. I would actually probably sue Trump right away. And maybe get some money out of it, because he can't sue me. Depending on the state, different states are different. In some states, if I sue you and I lose, I have to pay your attorney's fees. But in other states, if I sue you and I lose, I don't have to pay your attorney's fees. But also, it's a federal question too, because trademark's always federal. But the point being is, I would sue Trump. I would get news that way. I'd make the clear stance that I'm anti-Trump. I'd make him look like a fool, and maybe I get some money out of it. You know what I mean? And check this out. I'd sue him, settle it for 10 grand. You know, not a huge amount, 20 grand, 40 grand, whatever you can settle for. Take that money and donate it to a cause that is harming, either is getting negatively affected by Trump, or is just a good cause. Like St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Like, you could save kids' lives with $40,000. You know what I mean? So that's what I would do.
You could also buy a ostrich suit.
What I would do is I would tell people I was doing St. Children's. No. But I would make some good out of the evil, and I would make my performance art out of that, and then I'm taking this evil thing and making some good out of it, and I'd make that an art performance art in of itself.
John, that's lovely.
Well, thank you, Adam. Well, speaking of lovely things. Here's something.
Speaking of lovely things, I'm going to play a song because we haven't done that yet.
Aerosmith, Living on the Edge?
Yeah. No, we're going to play Weird Al Living in the Fridge.
In the elevator, going up when I'm going down.
Oh, Aerosmith is so just not – just John, that is not a band that speaks to my understanding of how you interact with the world or people in it. Let me tell you. I could not pull that shit off. Maybe this band could. So here's a band called Fountain. So Fountain, they're originally from, let's say, Vancouver, Victoria, somewhere out there in BC. But they moved to Montreal, as all people do. And they just put out their, I want to say, their first true LP. They had a couple cassettes that they put out 3 or 4 years ago. Those recently got collected, but this is their first sort of front to back, 12 song record that they put out. The record, which has the greatest name ever, is called Acid Bath from the Jaded Jungle, and it features Fountain being spectacularly weird. This is a band that plays, I guess it's nominally punk rock, but it's pretty deconstructed. It's full of syncopation and jerky rhythms and sort of like strange percussion and guitars, not necessarily riffing, but making making a lot of racket. It is a band that plays with a certain amount of really snarky, multi-vocaled enthusiasm that when I listen to it really gives me a bit of a like bratty Beastie Boys vibe. There's something that's very druggy about Fountain. There's something that's very, I want to say almost kind of surfer about Fountain, not in their music, but just like in just there's some attitude thing to this band that just strikes me as very just kind of like, it's got this jaded Californian snark to it. It's hard to describe what Fountain is because they sound so unique and weird and crazy. So I'm going to play a song off of Acid Bath from the Jaded Jungle. I'm going to play a song called Half Dome Preserves the Classical. Don't ask what that means. And it's off this record, and it's a super wacky, crazy record. So you should go check it out because it's fun. So here you go. This is Fountain. We're back, John. What were you gonna say?
Well, we got a lot of stories. I will say, man, Adam White has been finding the aggressive, weird stuff lately, man. And I've been digging it, man. I mean, Adam White's got pretty good taste. Adam White and I listen to not totally different stuff. We have some overlap. We have different styles, but Adam White has good taste in new music. I gotta say, he digs up a lot of interesting new stuff.
I am trying. I mean, it all has my particular national bias to it, but you know, I'm going back to that example that I mentioned earlier in the show here about like where you could do punk news exclusively talking about punk bands from Texas, where like there is so much stuff that is out there and so much of it is good that you could pick any weird direction and just keep going in it. You want to talk about bands from Belgium? You could probably do a whole fucking thing and just talk about bands from Belgium.
Integrity's from Belgium.
I just took a long drink of wine there, so that was why there was silence. It was not meant as a slight on Integrity. The Ramones, John. There's going to be a deluxe reissue of Road to Ruin coming out. Did you know this?
I wrote the article. I hope I know it.
So this is following on the heels of deluxe reissues of their first three albums. The Ramones are releasing a deluxe edition of 1978's Road to Ruin. Following in line with the earlier releases, the new edition includes three CDs. The first CD is a remastered version of the original album and a new mix of the same LP. The second CD includes the singles mixes of songs from the record and about 20 demos and rough mixes and things like that, outtakes. The third is a previously unreleased live show. This one is called Live at the Palladium, New York, New York, December 31st, 1979. The set also includes a vinyl copy of the remastered album along with the CDs and everything else. So this is all coming out on September 21st, which is one day shy of the album's 40th anniversary. You can go check that out. There's the full track listing and everything on there is on Punk News. John, I'm sure I've asked you this before and I don't know if you actually have the answer to it. Is the remaster of this
different than the one from 2002?
It's different than the one from 2002.
However, I'd say the 2002s are actually a little bit better. The remaster is just slightly louder, I guess slightly sharper. But it's almost like too loud in that like everything's loud. I would say the gold standard for all album reissues are either the 2002 Ramones reissues, which are as factoring in elevation from original issue to new issue and bonus material added. The gold standards, without questions, are the Ramones 2002 reissues and the Crass 2010 reissues. Those two sets are the golden standard for reissues.
I'm always shocked that you could keep going back to the well, at least as far as like remastering and doing it.
Well, I'm actually pro this set, generally speaking, but there was no need to remaster from the 2002 CDs. Sound great. They sound amazing. They sound better than the records, I'd say, although you could argue the records sound better just cause they're a little bit more warm, if you will, but the CDs sound great. Adam's saying, I'm surprised you could go back to remaster it. The answer is the benefits from the remaster between the 2002 to now are negligible or even negative. That is, it is as mastered, as remastered, as good as it's going to be. They're not going to make it sound any better through remastering the original album. That's as good as it's going to get.
I mean, I suppose if you are a studio engineer, you could probably go listen to a remaster of something and think that like I could do a better job than that and like create something that has like imperceptible differences that you are really focused in on, but like your average schmo is never gonna hear on their Zune. But
I also think like the new mixes of the album, it's like why these albums are perfect. Why it's like you're just making content because you don't have content. The demos, it's like, yeah, you listen to that once, but who cares? I mean, like, it's all right, whatever. The single mixes, I approve of that. But those have already all been released. However, the true bonus pop on this, Adam, is the live disc. This live disc looks tasty. The reason it looks tasty is because, A, it is the first officially released live recording with Markey on drums as opposed to Tommy. And also, this track list is a very unusual track list for the Ramones. Prior to this, the set list was almost just Ramones Alive, 1977, same set list every night for like a couple of years. This has got a lot of like unique stuff into it. Go Mental, I Don't Want You, I'm Against It, A Bad Brain, We're a Happy Family, I Wanted Everything. We don't usually see these on Ramones Live albums, and so I'm thrilled that this is being released. Well, these go for $70, which honestly, if you ask me, is reasonable for three CDs and a record. However, I've already got the $5 Amazing reissue from 2002, so I'm not going to drop $70 on this. But the live recordings look great. The criticism of both Linda Ramone and Mickey Leigh, Joey Ramone's brother, is that they're milking the Ramones' legacy. I cannot agree with that, Adam. I would say that even though they put out lots of t-shirts, why not? People want Ramones' t-shirts. Let people buy Ramones' t-shirts if they want to buy them. I think both Linda and Mickey are doing an exceptional job at maintaining the dignity of these recordings and presenting them in a thoughtful manner that both does justice to the material, but also makes it available and basically is fair to the underlying material. I think they're doing an excellent job of keeping this material in print and doing justice to it and without making it cheesy, if you ask me.
Yeah, the set looks kind of classy enough. Well, I think we're in this universe right now where easy access to this music exists, right? So there's no barrier if you wanted to go hear Road to Ruin, because you know you could go listen on your streamy thing of choice and pay no one any money and technically legally be able to go do that. So when it comes to sets like this, so long as they are, you know, preserving the, you know, the vision of the art and all that stuff, and they're not taking it off in some screwy direction, then, you know, it's there. If someone wants to spend the money on it, they can spend the money on it. It's not there. It's not exclusively the only way that you could buy this. Like, if you need a copy of Road to Ruin, you don't have to buy this one.
So yeah, you can get it for $5, you know, so.
That's all right. So people, Punk News Podcast listeners, if you want to buy this, we ain't going to judge you.
I'll say good on you, and good on Mickey Leigh and Linda Ramone for at least, like, I mean, some remasters are just like point, like the Judas Priest 2002 remasters. They have like two random bonus tracks that weren't even from the album. They're from like different eras. They're not doing it. They're taking time and effort and care to do this instead of just puking out material. So good on them. Speaking of another band that doesn't puke out material, speaking of a band that is very careful with how they release their stuff, even though they put out a lot of stuff, effed up. They're releasing Doze Your Dreams. I think it's October 11 it comes out, something like that. They're also releasing a companion album with the album Doze Your Dreams. The companion album is called Raise Your Voice, Joyce, which is also a single off Doze Your Dreams. The idea behind Doze Your Dreams is it's got this woman called Joyce who's old, who sends David Iliad, the effed up common man, back through time. This is a compilation. I mean, it isn't really. It's making itself to appear as a compilation of basically English punk and alt music from like 1980 to like 1988 or 1990 or so. They released one track featuring Briony Bainon. It's called Black Cardigans, and the track is basically straight crash worship. Oh, that's funny. Crash worship, and there's a band called Crash Worship. That's funny. And I gotta say, two things. Adam, this track is, I mean, it is crash worship, and it's cool, and it sounds great, and I dig it. But also, effed up, they always put out, like, effed up doesn't put out albums. They put out universes. You know, David Comes to Life had David Comes to Life. It had the compilation, David's Town. It had all the singles, and it had the mixtape that came with it. Looks like they're doing that again, and I approve, and
I mean, the difference here, because that's what I thought. At first I looked at this and I said, like, oh, so this is like David's Town. And with David's Town, if anyone remembers that, this was a – David's Town was – they basically made up a bunch of fake bands and played in a bunch of various crazy styles. And, you know, these styles were very fucked up. A lot of power pop, a lot of just straight up sort of pop rock.
Too much power pop. I could use a couple more punk tracks on David's, yeah, Town.
David's Town was really clear. David's Town had a lot of like Marvelous Darlings era Ben Cook in it. And you know, none of the David's Town stuff, I think, relied on Damien's vocals at all.
My old man's a ginger, which was hilarious and awesome.
Was that him?
Yeah, and also I did like the Ben Cook track, Let's Go for a Curry or whatever. Or Do You Want to Go for a Curry with Me? That was a good song too.
So this one, I think, is real, John.
These are all, I can't say they're all, but many of the bands on this are actual bands. For example, Good Throb is a band that's been in the UK for a little while, very Crass influenced.
Yeah, so like so I'm looking at the track listing on here, and like these are real bands. Like Sauna Youth is a real band. Hurula is a real band. Like they had a release on Deranged. Brioni Bainon, I don't want to say Brony, like it's a My Little Pony thing. Brioni Bainon, who did the really Crass influenced single that we played here. I don't get the – I wasn't familiar with her or with a band by that name. But if you look it up, it is someone that has written for Maximum Rock and Roll and has a music blog and things like that. So like these are real folks from the universe. So it's not exactly Davidstown in that it's completely world building. And I think that makes this a very interesting – artifact, because if it is just all, you know, other artists that are on this compilation outside of the title, I'm curious as to like what, like you could argue like how involved is Funked Up in this from an artistic standpoint. I mean, they curated it, I guess, but you know, that it is a curious artifact. The song we played is cool, so I'm going to go listen to this. But it's arguable as to whether this is as much a world building thing as say Davidstown was.
I think it is. I mean, because it claims to be set in 1982.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know. We'll have to see. I want to go find. I want to see the actual. I want to see how this is presented. This is one of these things where to actually acquire it and sort of like take it apart and see how they've packaged it and labeled it and everything would be useful to, I think, help contextualize it.
Do you think we'll get an effed up mixtape this year, this time around? I hope so. I love those effed up mixtapes. They are so cool.
I don't know. I haven't heard word one way or the other.
Those are actually one of the main things that influenced the idea for the Punk News comps.
Oh, John, since we're just all over the place anyways, I want to tell you about my big victory.
You got a cassette player?
No. I made the fucking cassette player work in the 2 minutes before the show. And so I had a deck that I was pretty happy about having here because, you know, it's a two-bay deck. It has, you know, recording capabilities between the two of them. Yeah, it was the one that was part of my parents' stereo at some point, right? But I went down, John, and I hooked it all up to my pulled all the wires at the back of my turntable so I could like grab the cables out of the amp and plug it into this thing, and I put a tape in, one of your tapes in, John. Put a Narmer Records tape in. I hit the play button.
Which one did you put in?
Actually, I think I put in the one that I was the least worried about destroying, which I think was
probably Summer Soiree or maybe.
Yeah, because I have a handful of those, right? Yeah. So it was one that I wasn't too worried about. I put in a tape and I hit play and it just goes, chunk. And then it doesn't play. And I put it in the other bay and hit play and then chunk, and it doesn't go. So I took the fucker apart tonight and I was expecting to go in there and
find it. Did you flip the tape over, Adam? Did you try flipping the tape over?
Yes, John. I know tapes work. I took it apart and I was expecting the belts to be dead or decayed or whatever. But no, that wasn't the case. So then I did what everyone does when they run into a technical problem is I searched for it on YouTube, and I found, you know, various YouTube weirdos trying to figure out why their tape decks didn't work, and the solution seemed to be that there's a sensor in there that tells whether the tape is in or not, and I just needed to. I needed this in the most sensual way, John. push down on this sensor a little bit.
Titillating.
And then after giving it some love, it works now. So
congratulations, so, Adam.
So this is I'm very excited. This was like 20 minutes ago. Before, well, not 20 minutes. It was, God, an hour and 10 minutes and 25 seconds ago. So yes, I now have a working tape deck. So back in the game, John.
Well, Adam, many reasonably priced hours of entertainment await you, and not only that, is many exclusive hours of entertainment await you. So, and also many thrilling and daring hours of entertainment await you. So congratulations, Adam, on entering the exciting world of cassette playing.
John, I'm so close to becoming a kind of person that's going to start putting out cassette compilations.
Do it, so Adam. It's a lot of fun and it's pretty cheap.
Oh, God, it's just I'm close. I'm really close. All right. Anyways, what else are we talking about here?
Well, I want to talk about one. Do we want to talk about the sad one, or should we save it till next week? I think maybe we'll save it till next week, unless you're burning to talk about this one today.
No, fuck that guy. Talk about something else.
Let's close out with a cool one. Trypticon is playing Decibel Beer and Metal Fest in L.A. That's right around Christmas time. I think it's December 1st and 2nd. Trypticon is playing December 2nd. Adam White, do you know who Trypticon is?
Nope.
Trypticon is an excellent band. Trypticon is basically the latest incarnation of Celtic Frost. And if you don't know who Celtic Frost is, Celtic Frost was an incarnation of Hellhammer. And if you don't know who Hellhammer, Celtic Frost, or Trypticon is, they are basically fronted by a guy called Thomas Gabriel. Celtic Frost is the biggest band out of all three. They are Swedish and, without question, one of the most important and daring and weird thrash bands. Celtic Frost isn't strictly thrash, but they certainly were kind of lumped in with the Slayer crew and all those kind of guys. Trypticon is kind of Celtic Frost, but even heavier and weirder and more experimental. And they're going to do an all Celtic Frost set, so it's going to be Trypticon playing all Celtic Frost. Trypticon and Celtic Frost, if you ask me, are basically the same band because the main guy, Thomas Gabriel, fronts both bands, but still. This is cool that they're doing this. I might fly out for this. However, I didn't realize this, that for the past 2 years or so, Trypticon has basically been playing 80% Celtic Frost songs anyways in their set, where they usually do almost all Trypticon songs, so I guess it's not that special, but this is cool. Celtic Frost, if you know about Slayer and Metallica and Anthrax and, you know, maybe High on Fire and Mastodon, and you're looking for that next step, check out Celtic Frost and Trypticon. Let's just play Trypticon covering Celtic Frost from one of their EPs. This is Dethroned Emperor, which is one of the classic Celtic Frost songs as performed by Trypticon. And I really like, let's see how many times I can say Trypticon in a minute. And I really like how vocalist Tom Gabriel pronounces the Emperor. He pronounces it like he says like Emperor. He doesn't like say Emperor. He says it, I guess because he's Swedish. Anyways, Trypticon's awesome. This is a cool set. Adam, like, what's your opinion of special sets? That is, band doing album or band having some sort of theme for their set?
I am generally pro, however, slightly con in the sense that it feels like a festival gimmick to me.
True.
I've seen some pushback lately on the overwhelming amount of festivals that have just like cropped up and taken over the universe in the past couple years, and how, I mean, on the one hand, there's a lot of bands that you might not be able to get to see if it's not by going to some festival. But on the other hand, a lot of bands aren't necessarily touring in the same way that they did. And to say that, oh, you know, come see me play this festival might be a little, like, you know, it's assuming you have the money to go see a festival, you know, to go travel and to go to take on all that expense. So, you know, if you were going to be a band and you're going to go, you know, play a tour, and on that tour you've decided you're going to tour and play one of your albums or you're going to play some special set, then that's fine. But if you're a band that's just like not going to play for years except for doing like big festival appearances where you're just going to like play your most famous album front to back, yeah.
Well, as we've discussed, I'm not thrilled about band playing full album front to back just because you know what's going to happen. But I do love some of my all-time favorite shows. You know, Flag, Danzig doing all Samhain. I'm trying to think of some other special shows. Melvin's doing albums, but like all mixed up and out of order. Those are some of my very favorite shows I've ever seen. Anyways, this is Trypticon covering Celtic Frost, Dethroned Emperor. And we're back, Adam, and this was an extended episode, and I feel like it was over before it began. It was just you and me. You know what I mean? It's just us BSing, and we've already clocked in an hour and a half.
Yeah. We should just kill Ricky. There's no consequence.
Yeah.
in the air, loving in that love, Vita, living it up when I'm going down.